big rocks and all that sort of thing.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back, my friends, to the pod that never ends. Gather round.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
Featuring myself, W. McWall.
Yeah.
And his very good self, the estimable, the inimitable, the awesome, the only.
The essence of rock.
The essence of rock.
Yeah.
There was the voice of rock. And then there is the essence of rock.
Yeah.
And that's you, John.
It is, yeah.
Say hello nicely.
Well, hello. Yeah.
To Johnny.
Oh, I thought you were...
I know you kind of crashed my scene there, but I'm used to that. So, John.
Yeah.
What will we talk about today?
Why do you always do that? What you're going to talk about. And you throw it to me.
Well, I want to get you involved.
But
get
you
involved.
Were the one who came up with it. You were the one who said, let's do this subject that you're going to reveal in a minute.
Yeah, but see, we're doing a show.
Because with all your, due thought and preparation, I saw it on the news last night.
That's right. I like to keep things fresh.
Yeah.
I like to keep things fresh, John. You see what I mean? There I was last night, watching the international news as I... obviously must.
Yeah.
And there was this item.
Can I just ask, was this GB news that you appear on?
Funnily enough, no.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Could have been.
Checking.
Perfectly reputable news organisation that brings you news.
When they employ you.
anyway.
To comment on rock's latest scandals.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Like, there's been a scandal in rock. Let's call Mick Wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We couldn't get any of the others. They all turned us down. He always says yes. Go to him. It's funny, John. The amount of people I've bumped into that saw me doing that Fat Bottom Girls thing on GB News.
We should say Mick Wall appeared on GB News because Bottom Girls had been cancelled or whatever it was.
Well, there.
And so the researcher rang Brian May, said, do you want... They went to the next name on the list, Roger Taylor.
Yeah.
He didn't want to do it. They went to the next name on the list, that guy who's their singer now. He didn't want to do it. So they went to the next name on the list, which was W. Mick Wall.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I stepped in.
He picked up.
I stepped up, helped the lads out.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. I mean, I don't... watch.
And so what you're saying is since then you have people rushing up to you. Go, oh, you were so right about Fat Bottom Girls. That was... You said what the nation thought.
Do you know, honestly, that's sort of what I'm getting.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I wouldn't say hundreds of people.
No.
I think like one person I bumped into last week, but also on Instagram.
Who you'd sent the video to.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, they were watching it. You sent it to
the village WhatsApp group. Hey, have you seen me? Look over when I was on TV. Just like I used to be all those years ago.
Okay, you got me. I'm busted. That is what I did.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're talking about. Oh, yeah, so we're watching the telly. You brought in GB News. I think you should be on GB News.
You said you were watching the news, and I just said, was it GB News?
The way you talk so casually about the opposite sex, I think you should be on there. You and Lisa Dominique, you'd be the dream team on The Breakfast Show, wouldn't you? John and Lisa. Breakfast with John and Lisa.
on. You're trying to say I should go on GB News?
With Lisa?
You think I'm the sort of person who would go on GB News?
Hang on. Wasn't it just a pod or two ago you were saying, I'll do anything?
Yeah.
I don't care what it is.
Saudi money.
I want
money.
Saudi money.
Yeah, I did want Saudi money.
But
I still
do.
I do. So what's that one that they call Al Jazeera? I go on that.
Do you know what? Al Jazeera is a very good channel.
Yeah.
It's a proper news channel.
I told you, I'd go on it.
God is great.
I just told you, I will go on Al Jazeera.
What you said was go on anything. You said I'll go on anything. I'm offering you a plum gig.
Yeah.
Breakfast show.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't. I don't.
You and Lisa.
Because, no, start too early.
What if we offered you £1 million?
Yeah, well, GB News are paying. How much did they pay you to come on and talk about fat bottom girls?
Oh, well, I couldn't possibly reveal the intense contract
negotiations. No, but looking around, I don't think it was £1 million.
Wow. Well, that's me deflated. So,
so you were watching the news.
As I do, because, you know, being a news
kind of guy, that phone could go at any minute. Could you come on?
Yeah.
And put us straight about something.
Anything you like.
Yeah.
I can tell you the actuality. So I'm watching the news because I need to keep a flow of international information. Yeah. You know. And they had an item on Bob Geldof. Because there is a stage musical about to come out.
Oh, I thought it was because he told Russell Brand to fuck off.
Who, Geldof?
Yeah, that was good.
No, I didn't see that. What was that?
It was on TV last week when the whole Russell Brand thing blew up.
Oh, yeah.
They found a clip of an old awards show where Brand was the presenter and he was giving an award out. Geldof was the recipient. And he'd obviously said something smart-ass.
Right.
As Geldof walked up.
And what
Geldof just walked up to the microphone and I can't remember his exact words, but it was along the lines of Russell Brand, fuck you. And just sort of gave him the death stare.
Really?
Russell Brand did his prancy, bloody, witch hunter general dance vibe, whatever it was he used to do.
Yeah, Russell Brand, he would have, back in the 80s, He'd have been the sort of guy you'd see on Kerrang or in a band, or wouldn't he?
How do you mean?
Like John Newey or someone, the hair.
Jesus Christ. Can we just disassociate John Newey for legal reasons from Russell Brand?
No, I'm saying, groovy guy with
a dandy
haircut.
A randy dandy,
right, as you put it just before we came on. A randy dandy.
You're digging a hole for yourself here.
The bird on GB News, who was my opposite, my opponent, as it were, at the end.
Have they brought on an opponent to defend the fat bomb?
Banning. I'm defending.
You're defending Fat Bomb Girl. She's saying it should be banned.
You're fucking right.
Right. Well, why did she think it should be banned?
Well, I'll tell you what, I will dig the clip, as I would urge.
You get it, go in the Village WhatsApp group, get it out.
Go to YouTube
Go to WhatsApp group, local village, M Wall.
No. This is an international situation. So she was a larger lady, and at the end of it, she's going, it's easy for a white middle-aged man.
Yeah, which you are.
And I said, she goes, but you don't have to live inside a body of a larger woman. And I said, that's true. I said, however, I have lived in the body of a larger bald man in glasses for quite a long time now. So I think I understand your pain. I said, but it's just a song. It's just a silly song. It's just a bit of fun. And she said something like, "You just want us to be happy fatties."
Oh, she was there to take you down.
No, I think you'll find any taking down was in the opposite direction. But I just burst out laughing. I couldn't stop laughing at happy fatty. So then I spent the next 2 minutes trying to work a situation where
trying
I could
to make
say,
it seem like you weren't laughing at that.
No, I wanted to go. I do like happy fatties. What, is there something wrong with liking happy fatties? Better than sad fatty.
See, this is the level of debate that GB News play for.
This is quality. As I was talking, I could see Eamon pissing himself. He's like hiding behind the papers. Going, you can see the shoulders going. And that woman he has working with him, very talented. So I'm watching the telly last night, and Geldof is being interviewed because there's going to be a musical stage show about Live Aid, and it's called Just for One Day.
Oh, okay, I get it. Yeah.
And so it's got actors Live playing Aid. Geldof.
If younger readers might not know, Live Aid, the festival, just lasted for a day.
Yes, yes.
So...
how far are we going to go with it? Have we now got to go, and younger readers, Live Aid was a,
no,
a blah-de-blah.
So. It was the first ever sort of big multi-act televised festival thing for charity.
Was it,
well, what was what
well, no,
was
it was,
before?
Yeah. For in charity. Fairness, it was, yeah.
Yeah, you,
televised.
It gave you an extra reason to watch because it was for a very good cause, so... You know, they did the charity fundraising. Geldof was banging the table. Give us your fucking money now! Except in an Irish accent.
Was he from Northern Ireland?
Yeah.
He sounded like the Reverend Ian Paisley.
I was going to say, he sounded like Ian Paisley. He did back in the
North,
day.
Stand up to the IRA!
Yeah.
Oh, my God, the machine is spiking.
Well, it doesn't like you saying IRA.
No,
really.
Why not?
See, that's got you nervous.
No, I'm a Republican to my heart.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Did I ever tell you, my dad, this is in the late 60s.
This is probably going to take a dark turn at this point, people.
No. My father used to have, I don't know if you remember, it probably might be before your time, he used to have these big old cars. They were called Humbers, something like that.
And he had Hummers?
Humber.
No.
He had this big old car. And he painted it in the colours of the Irish flag.
Right.
So the roof was green,
yeah.
The body was gold, and the doors were white.
Right.
And this is like 1970, when all the bombs are going. I mean, it's really not funny, you know. Everywhere we went, he would be stopped at least once sometime. And they'd be like, all right, Paddy, where are you going then? He goes, I'm going to let off a bomb. What about you? I'll be going, fucking, please don't. Yes, so that's lovely.
That's a good story.
So they've got actors doing Geldof and presumably Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
Who's very much part. Queen are very much part of this pod as well.
Well, Queen were very much the stars of the day, weren't they? Because, again, for the younger readers, yeah. If they don't know, Queen were the first band to work out what you should actually do as a medley, because each band only had 5 or 10 minutes, so they would all do their best three songs.
Well, apart from...
Except for Queen, who came up with the idea of doing a medley. So in their 10 minutes, they did all of their good bits.
They did their whole greatest hits album.
Yeah, without Fat Bottom Girls. They'd already got ahead of that.
That
they
curve.
Said in you know, almost 40 years' time, people won't like this song. We won't do that one. And so. But they were very good. So Queen were very good on the day. So they will be.
You're saying
it,
they did all their hits. Status Quo famously opened the show.
Yeah.
With Rocking All Over the World.
Which,
but what were the next two songs?
Duty Bound to Play, weren't they? Rocking All Over the World.
Oh, it's a perfect start, you know.
Yeah.
But what were. You said they played their most. What were the other two songs?
I bet they did. Whatever you want, whatever you like.
No,
whatever you do,
you
pay your money.
What did they? I don't know. I don't think so. They did Don't Waste My Time.
Did they?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. I mean, I love Don't Waste My Time, but they've had like 60 chart hits.
Yeah.
Here's one you don't know.
Yeah.
You're a Bow fan.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's for starving children. Don't waste my time.
And everyone knows that Status Quo were the first band on.
Yeah.
Who were the second band?
God,
this is a good question, isn't it?
Whoa.
Never finish second.
Band two.
Yeah.
That's, you know, no one cares. Yeah.
But the other thing was the afternoon was almost the prime time, wasn't it? Because it was on TV.
Yeah.
And because they were throwing over, as they say, to Philadelphia.
Where
you were the following night. The same evening,
but just hours.
Yeah, so it finished quite early in
We watched Status Quo on the telly at 7 a.m., which was midday. Yeah. So it was a 5-hour difference.
Yeah.
So when it finished here, I don't even know what time. 11?
See, that's what I'm saying. I can't remember what time. I remember at the end, they had everybody out, obviously, and they did the Live Aid song, didn't they? The Band Aid song. But I've got a feeling like it wasn't, I know it was during the summer, but it wasn't dark at that point in my mind.
They would have had lights at Wembley. You know, like when you watch England now, play at night. I mean, yeah. No,
I know
it
that.
It doesn't look dark. Does
when
it?
I'm picturing it in my mind.
Oh, yeah. In your mind.
Yeah.
In the windmills.
Because then they're throwing over to, you know, as we've said before, they throw over to
the proper
lineup in America, where Led Zeppelin had reformed. It was very exciting. Black Sabbath had reformed with Ozzy.
Absolutely.
So it was big, big news over in the US.
Mm.
And obviously they had the Bob Dylan at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Who, true to form, decided he wouldn't play his three best known songs. Who would have guessed?
Well, no, didn't he did do Blowing in the Wind, I think.
I think he did, but I'm sure we've spoken before about how he did some incredible obscurity with his other song.
But the thing about Blowing in the Wind is that is maybe his most famous song, or one of them. But it's the one really famous Dylan song no one ever wants to hear again.
Yeah.
It's fucking awful. I mean, I loved it, you know, first time I heard it 4 million times ago. But are you a Dylan man?
No, very much not. Yeah.
Yeah, not even the exciting electric period.
No. Despite actually growing up within 5 miles of Blackbush Airport, where I believe he played a very famous show.
He did. Blackbush Airport
is now car auctions.
They used to have a wonderful market there on the weekend.
They
Blackbush
did.
Market.
Yeah, we used to go down and get your cheapo denim and leather jackets.
Yeah,
it was good
trainers.
Yeah, trailers.
Yeah, that's why trainers there.
Trainers. I think you said trailers.
Nah, God bless you. No, what we used to call them Tesco bounties.
Right.
So I've got Levi's.
Did you go down there?
He's got.
Did you go down there in your IRA car?
No. This is many years later, after I had left my past behind.
Yeah.
Struck out to a brand new bright tomorrow in the countryside. And it was while I was out here that the future and current Mrs. Wall introduced me to the joys of Blackbush Market on a Sunday morning.
Sunday, yeah. Sunday was Blackbush Market.
Eating a greasy burger.
I don't know if they still do it.
No, they don't.
Gone. Oh, is it?
Tragedy.
Yeah.
So Bob Dylan did headline there. You're quite right.
Yeah.
Back to Live Aid. I was wondering how the hell are they going to do it? And I didn't see the whole item. But I think it's going to be the story of. So it's not just showing you.
But I mean, it's sort of a classic idea for a jukebox musical, isn't it? Because you've got all of those songs that you can do.
Yeah.
I mean, U2 were on it. Ugh. Who I saw a back doing some Strato Dome in Las Vegas. Did you see it?
Oh, those pictures.
They built this enormous dome in Las Vegas, obviously.
The key is it's Las Vegas.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're not touring.
That's where you
taking
go
the money
to,
in Vegas. That's where old rock stars go
well,
to
Well, you
die.
Know, it's good because they come to you, you know.
And
it's the dream.
You make a lot of
living
money.
The dream. They come
no
to you.
No road expenses.
No.
Just do it every night.
Stay in the big hotel. I mean, Elvis had it sussed years ago.
He did.
Yeah.
Was touring. See,
1969 he started doing that.
Mick Mars has said he's left behind planes and Vegas.
Well, no, Nashville, if you want to see Mick Mars.
Oh, he won't leave Nashville?
No.
Oh,
well, okay. He'd have to go to Vegas, wouldn't he? He doesn't do planes.
Road trip?
Well, that's a long road trip, isn't it? Nashville to Vegas.
Yeah, but you'd be getting a nice tour bus, you know?
Yeah.
Sit at the back.
Yeah,
bats
maybe.
Bats hanging upside down.
Yeah.
Cobwebs.
Yeah.
Dry ice.
Yeah.
Chicks.
It's weird. The only trouble from the point of view of the pod for Live Aid is that it was 1985 it happened, which is kind of just before the big rock explosion, wasn't it? You know, it was like if it had been in 1995, well, you would have had Guns N' Roses and you would have had Maiden, and you would have had, you know, you've had all of those, but you probably had a Pearl Jam and that kind of thing. But 1985, it was sort of pre, I mean, let's face it, Motorhead weren't on.
No.
You know, Saxon weren't on.
Thin Lizzy weren't on. And if it wasn't for Phil Lynott, Geldof, you know, I mean, Phil showed
so
him the
ropes. So why wasn't Phil on? I've got a feeling Brian Adams was on.
I think he was on in America.
Yeah.
Because I, in fact, he definitely was because I saw him.
Yeah. So they had a sort of bit of rock, but not.
Well, in America, you know, I hear what you're saying. But they were trying for the broadest, but there just wasn't that.
You know, it's not like you could go, oh, well, I mean, for example, it was during Aerosmith's drug period, wasn't it? They weren't on. You know, had it been a few years later, they would have probably been on as this classic American type rock band. But it was too early for Motley Crue to be on, which would have been, you know, Vince would have been up for it. As he was for the Moscow Peace Festival.
Fat Vince coming out to feed the world.
Yeah.
So what's it, of all the festivals, John, you've ever been to, what is the greatest?
Oh, well, yeah. But I'm often asked this question.
Oh, are you?
And I always say it's either the Workington Rock Festival of 1989 or something, where we went all the way. It was called the Cumbria Rock Festival. And we went all the way to Workington.
Beautiful town.
A long way away.
The appropriately named Workington.
Yeah, a long way away. Mm. And from memory, Marillion were on. Wolfsbane were on.
Was this the festival you were banging on about a few weeks ago? Because a reader wrote in.
Did they say they were there?
Poster. Yeah, they were there.
Yeah, that's right.
They corrected you on a few actualities.
Maybe Little Angels were on. I can't remember.
Sounds like one of those tremendous British music festivals.
It lasted for a few days. And that was where, I'm pretty sure that was where we ended up in some hotel room somewhere. And I remember Ginger was there. No, Ginger was there.
Were there chicks in the room,
yeah,
John?
But
there, I'll tell you who was in the room. At the door, you know.
There was some maniac with a tattoo gun, right? And was literally just scribbling on people's arms with the tattoo gun. Yeah.
So that it stayed forever?
Yeah, yeah. It was a tattoo gun. It was a tattoo needle. And the guy was just, people were so hammered. It was just like literally scribbling on their arms.
Fuck me.
Unbelievable.
No, I remember that happening. Sure that and I, in the end, I pulled him aside. I said, Ozzy, you just got to cool it.
Yeah, yeah. So that was the Workington Rock Festival.
And that's your greatest experience. My, oh, my. Yeah.
No, well,
I suppose I would share this memory.
I would go back to, as a young whippersnapper and coming from where I do, Reading Rock was the one. Because when you were sort of 16 or something, to go to Reading Rock and pitch a tent down by the river.
Did you? Is that what you did?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You did not.
We did.
You pitched a tent?
Yeah, bloody right.
When you say we?
Yeah, to pitch a tent.
Any women involved?
No. Oh. There were no women at the Reading Rock Festival.
Not in those
days. Early
1980s. Listen, my daughters now go
to
Reading.
Oh, now, completely
I had to
different.
Drop them off this year, and I'm going, there aren't any men.
I know. That,
it's all young women.
And it's like there's no sort of oceans of mud and takeaways.
No
it's
one
like,
throwing full plastic bottles
you,
of piss.
Yeah, would you like a falafel with, you know, pomegranate? And they weren't selling that stuff.
Check this out. Yeah. They had fucking sniffer dogs. So God forbid you might turn up at your rock festival with a bit of weed in your pocket or something. Yeah. Fucking out, mate. You can't come in.
This was a barren farmer's field outside of Reading by the river with the Michael Schenker group somewhere in the distance. You know, that was Reading.
Was he still playing?
I tell you what I did see there was the Black Sabbath gig when they had the massive Stonehenge, the only time they could ever use
with
it.
With Gillan.
With Ian Gillan. Saw that.
Finish and with my woman, cause
if memory says, if I've got this right, that was the same year that the following night was Thin Lizzy's last ever gig.
83.
if that was 80, if I've not got them, because I went to a few, so it might be confused in my mind, but I'm pretty sure it was Sabbath on the Saturday and then Thin Lizzy's last gig on the Sunday. I remember Thin Lizzy's last gig was a real downer. I mean, no atmosphere, real downer, yeah.
I think it fucking rained that day as well.
I think it did. I remember, and I saw Alice Cooper there one year doing his whole, they had the whole guillotine thing at that point.
Right.
So it was early 80s, mid 80s.
It was 83, John. And I'll tell you why I can pinpoint it. Because that Gillan Sabbath album that came out, which is why they did Reading Festival, Born Again, I was asked to write the, you know, in those days, they'd send you it was a record.
Yeah.
And inside the sleeve, there'd be a few pages of like a bio.
Yeah, yeah, like a record company bio, they used to call it. Yeah.
I was asked if I would write that.
If it was a bit, usually, this is just to say, if it was just a bog standard band, the press officer would write it and it would be quite short. But when it was an album, they really wanted to make everyone feel special. They said, oh, well, we've asked so-and-so to write a bio, and it'll be a few pages long, have an interview with the band and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
And you get like a couple of hundred quid for it. It was a good gig.
Not in 83, I think it was more like 50. Yeah.
But I mean,
But listen, so...
I used to get a couple of...
Summer of 83.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I was not at my height.
No.
I
not at your full height. I wasn't at my three or four.
I wasn't at my fullness. And no one knew if I ever would be again, even I. But I'd been their PR in 1980 with Heaven and Hell and all that. I guess Pete Mikowski wasn't around, so they just fucking searched me. How they found me, I don't know, because I was living with a fucking lunatic girl in Chiswick in a flat where with one phone that you couldn't dial out on.
Right.
You could get incoming calls because of the bills, you know. Somehow they found me, and I had to go to the phone box up the road to ring them. And they were like, can you do the biog? Yeah, but 50 quid, 100 quid, whatever it was. I was like, absolutely, 50. I was on the dole. 50 quid? Fucking hell. Yeah. Only trouble was I didn't have a typewriter anymore. I thought, well, it doesn't matter.
No.
In my adult state, I'm like...
You're just thinking 50 quid.
That's all I can think of is 50 quid. And so in longhand, I wrote this bio from... There's no Google in those days. Plus, my memory is not at its zenith. I just wrote this absolute piece of shit, convinced that they would just go, oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
And I sent it in. I didn't hear anything. Where's my 50 quid?
Where's the 50 quid,
back
mate?
To the phone box, two P's. Boop, 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 boop. Hello, it's me.
Yeah.
Where's my money? And... It was Bernadette Coyle, and she said something like, Mick, you weren't serious when you sent us that way. Yeah? I went, what's the right answer? So I went, well, it's my notes, you know. She goes, we're not paying you for that. It was rubbish. You obviously didn't even listen to the album, did you?
Yeah.
Obviously fucking not. Yeah. What do you want from me? 50 quid. So... They never used it.
Oh,
can you believe that?
No, that's disgraceful.
Utter. And I never got paid.
I mean, given the seamless multinational operation that Ian Gillan joining Black Sabbath was.
Managed by Don Arden.
Yeah,
I mean, probably showed it to Don.
It all worked out so well for them. Yeah, because that Reading Rock was a disaster. That was when they'd had. This is, people always think this is where Spinal Tap got the Stonehenge thing from. Apparently, it can't have been because Spinal Tap was already done by that point. Right. But they had a disastrous moment with the album cover, which, if you ever hear, the person that designed it was Crusher Jewel, who was Kerrang's designer and did the classic, you know, was commissioned to do it, left it till the night before it was due, was scrabbling around, found a picture of a baby and put some sort of
a newborn baby crying,
and put some fake sort of devil horns on it.
Not even convincing. It just, you and I could have done it, you know?
And turned it red. So that, there's no element of a sort of stage show there. So they decided.
Plus they had my. Yeah. Oh shit, sorry, it's the mic. Plus they had my biog.
Yeah,
class.
Crusher's picture and the biog building up. So they had nothing for the stage set. So they decided they would build a Stonehenge replica and have it on. And at Reading, it looked great, but it was so big. When they went indoors, it didn't fit on any of the stages. Right. So as Ian Gillan, I did have to interview Ian Gillan a couple of years later. Must have been because I didn't join Kerrang till 87, but I remember interviewing him. He said to me what they ended up doing with it was chucking it in the dock at Rotterdam. Yeah, they didn't know what to do. So it got chucked in the dock and it sank.
Wow. Yeah. So yeah. So actually there's a salvage job.
Yeah, there's a salvage job to be done if you want
80, it. 93, that's 40 years ago.
Yeah, quite good. It's probably like marine. It's got all marine life swimming around it now. Quite good.
Maybe we could get Sabbath back together with Gillan. This is what I'm talking about. Never mind the Dio lineup. Never mind the Aussie lineup.
Yeah.
Never mind David Donato, Tony Martin, and all the other fuckers. Gillan.
Yeah.
Born Again.
It's the one they haven't.
Performing it underwater.
It's the one they haven't bought back.
And that's why we're going to do it,
yeah.
John. Underwater. Yeah. Underwater, John.
So anyway, I do, yeah. That festival I do remember, yeah. Mm. And Marillion were on Reading one year.
That was 83. Oh, no, it might have been 82.
No, I think it was before 82. That. Yeah.
No, it was 83. No, it wasn't 83. No, it was 82.
It was 82, I think.
Because they got signed.
Yeah, they were on very early in the day as well.
And they got signed, and shortly after that, Market Square Heroes came out as a single.
Yeah.
I remember Mark Kelly telling me, you know, on the first album, Script for a Jester's Tear. And you know the actual track?
I do know that, because I was a big fan of Reading back in those days. Hence my appearance at Reading Rock.
Well, you know, there's that bit, starting, you know, so here I am once more in the playground of the broken heart. That's when he had an upper register.
Yeah, one more experience, one more entry in a diary. Yeah, you see
well
the band, just, yeah, the band going, we're not putting that bit of music, mate. You're just going to have to speak that bit.
Well, there comes a moment, it's this sort of mysterious, foggy intro.
Yeah.
And then there's a little thing on the keyboard Mark Kelly does.
I'm losing on the swings. I'm losing on the roundabouts. And then it goes into the Genesis bit of too much too soon.
I'm dancing.
The game is over.
Mark told me. He said when we were doing that track, that
album. Should we say at this point, Mark Kelly is the most indiscreet member.
Marvellously indiscreet. When I was doing their book, their official biography, this is 86 or something, and I was very, conscientious. And I went on the road, I interviewed him, I went to the houses, blah, 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 blah. And I'm at Mark's, and we're talking about that album. And it was all done very low budget. They finished.
They did it at the Marquee Studios, I think. Yeah, just right in Soho, yeah.
And literally, that was one of the last things Mark did. And it was like 6 a.m, and everybody's like, can we fucking go, you know?
Mm.
He's got to come up with something. So he comes up with, do, 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 do. And he said, do you know where I got it from? He goes, you can't put this in the book, you know.
Mm.
He said, do you remember that Small Faces song?
Oh, what that?
Lazy. Is it Lazy?
Do, 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 do. Do, 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 do. Yeah, it is that. It is that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wouldn't it be nice to get on with my neighbours? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He goes, please don't put that in the book because it was a straight rip-off and I don't want anybody to sound that. Like, I said, Mark,
your secret is safe with me.
Your secret is safe for me at least until 2020.
Yeah.
So back to festivals. Yeah. Now, you're not going to ask me what my favourite one
was. Yeah, what was your favourite one, Mick?
So many, John. Yeah. So many. Remember in 85, the year of Live Aid, I was there at the American one.
Yeah.
But the same year was the first Rock in Rio festival.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I really did enjoy that.
Yeah.
But not necessarily to do with being at the festival, you see, more to do with being the fact all the bands are in two hotels which are about 100 yards from each other,
yeah,
on Copacabana Beach.
Ooh, nice.
So good time.
It's a bit different to Donington where you're either in the Post House or the what was the other one, the Novotel. Or the Post House.
Well but that was, you see, that was when you came along. Before you came along, we used to just drive there on the day and drive home again.
Oh.
It was literally maybe even the year you arrived, or the year before, we suddenly said, shall we get a hotel? I mean, shall we just, fuck's sake, get a hotel? So that's what happened after that.
That would have been 87, I think, the first one I went to.
Well, 84 was my first, and Crusher drove us. Do you remember the
in the green machine? Yes. They now call it a Citroen Dolly, don't they?
I think it was a Honda. It was a Honda.
No, it was a Citroen.
It was a Honda.
I'm
telling you now.
All right. I'm sure it was a Citroen.
Because I remember Skylet manning about cars, and I remember saying to him, what is this? And he went, a Honda. I'm like, a Honda? That's a fucking moped, isn't it, mate? He was like, looking at me like, fuck off, you know. We drove up from Terror Tower, where he lived in Bermondsey.
Yeah.
And we drove up with Kelly Pike, who was a
Virgin,
great PR.
Yeah. She's not Virgin Records. I wasn't insulting anyone.
Oh, God, no, because you and your, you know, more PC.
Yeah, world, I wouldn't do that.
No, because you might get cancelled. I wouldn't.
There's no way.
There's
you're
no
canceled.
Way. A man of my integrity and bona fides. But I remember we drove up to Donington. We had a couple of cases of probably lager. We had a bottle of mezcal.
Yeah.
We had a bottle of tequila. We had a bottle of old granddad whiskey. We had a big bag of weed. And we had a couple of grams of, what do you call that stuff, John?
So it's basically like this. It's basically like the opening to Fear and Loathing, except you're going to Donington rather than Las Vegas.
Yes, and it was a really sunny day.
Yeah.
I remember we got there in the parking bit, and I literally fell out of the car. And I went up to the, you know, you got your passes on. I was on hands and knees as I entered the backstage area. Like, honestly, not making fun, just trying to get to the gig.
Yeah.
And then I collapsed face first on the ground. And I must have been there at least an hour before someone got me, because I was supposed to be reviewing Y&T and Gary Moore, who were like really low on the bill, one of the first bands on.
Yeah.
I completely missed both of them. So I was unconscious on the floor at 1 p.m. And I remember going around asking people what happened. And then, you know, the Kerrang used to review all of it, and it'd be like, double page spread or four pages, remember? And there'd be like Van Halen were on that year, I think. The Van Halen review would be like, ooh, a couple of set the scene. AC/DC, the headlines, oh, it's 2 pages at least, you know. And then there's a Gary Moore review. I swear to God, man, is that an inch long? And then another really long review after it, whoever came next. And then Gary Moore, about an inch long.
Y&T,
yeah. Yeah, good reviews.
Yeah, excellent reviews.
Just not a great deal of actuality, you see.
Yeah. See, the first time I drove to Donington, which would have been 87, because I had, in my flash way, because I was coining in so much money from Kerrang. Because they did pay well in those days. You know, They paid you well, they didn't pay me well. They pay then what they pay now.
It's true.
And it was a lot easier to live.
It's true, yeah.
Not that I would write for them now. But I had an MG midget. You remember those cars?
Did you really have an MG? I used to love
them. Yeah, really nice little cars.
Two-seater, tiny back seat?
Two-seater with a little shelf on the back. But in the other seat, inevitably, was Marino.
And where was Lisa? In the trunk? Yeah. You tied her up and put her in?
I think that was the year that we were driving in. Because it was quite, you know, it was like a nice car. And you used to have those car passes. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
They'd send you a car pass through the post. And you were supposed to stick it in your windscreen to show that you could go in the car park and not have to park in Leicester or wherever it was that you had to park otherwise. So we're driving in and we were behind, I can't remember, it was someone from Motorhead. I can't remember, it was in their car going in ahead of us.
Wurzel?
It might have been Wurzel or someone like that. Probably. But it's like all the kids are like, they're all looking at, oh, it's Wurzel, it's Wurzel. And then they see this quite flash MG. And Marino's next to me, and he's sort of thinking, oh, they're all going to be, you know, doing something. And they were all the kids going, oh,
who's he?
Disappointing, you know. So my first experience of arriving at Donington was of disappointment that I was me.
But that sort of followed you through your career.
Well, it did. That was very much setting the tone. I can't remember who was on that year, 87. Was it Bon Jovi, maybe?
It was Bon Jovi. They were the headliners.
Yeah.
I've told you this story before, didn't I? I went back.
Oh, that was this.
I went back to interview John backstage for Radio One.
Yeah,
and no one was allowed in his special enclave. There was backstage, then there was VIP backstage, then there was dressing room backstage, and then there was this John area where he was just in there on his own.
That's right. Yeah,
and I was ushered in because obviously, but bros, you know, bros. And I'd just seen them on Top of the Pops a couple of nights before. This was at a moment when I was, honestly, I was really probably working on the Marillion book or something, but I was just travelling. I just didn't...
You just, like, you had time keep up. For Bon Jovi.
I didn't keep up.
No.
Slippery When Wet had been out, like, nearly a year.
Yeah.
And in those days...
It had been out more than a year. 87, it had come out in about
86.
Early, maybe, 86. No. Yeah, definitely.
No.
I'm going to look it up now.
How much you want to bet me?
You keep talking. And
I'll talk and you'll owe me a tenner.
How much do I want to bet the man who's literally just said I didn't know what was going on?
Tenner. I'll bet you a tenner right now.
I'm not entering your
Slippery When Wet came out in September 86. I know this shit.
I only bet when the odds are very heavily in my favour.
Oh, I wouldn't bet on this one then.
No, exactly. I'm not betting. I've told you. But I'm just looking it up. Go on.
No, all right. Well, listen. So... I've seen them on Top of the Pops a couple of nights before doing their latest single. Yeah. I think it was Never Say Goodbye or something.
Right, right.
Now, the thing was, I'd never actually listened to the album.
Yes, you're right. August the 18th, 1986.
Tenner, please.
Yeah.
Tenner.
Yeah.
That'll be a tenner.
Yeah.
I'd never really listened to the album because it had all the singles. I mean, well, yeah, what do you need, you know? But suddenly they're on Top of the Pops. I remember just sort of seeing it quickly, probably leaving for Donington the next day. And I'm like, oh, they've got a new single out. Fucking they must have a new album out. And I made the fatal error. As me and John are bonding.
Yeah,
no one's
blood on
back.
Blood.
Blood on blood. Bro on bro.
Yeah.
Dude.
Blaze of glory.
Blaze of glory.
Yeah.
And I said, I love the new album.
Complete wank.
Yeah. To soften him up.
Yeah.
He looked at me like, he went, we don't have a new album.
Yeah.
I went, oh.
Did you then say, oh, so I was just trying to soften you up?
No.
You didn't say that?
No, because I got caught off guard.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen it coming.
No.
So I sort of went, oh,
I don't mean the new album. I mean the...
I don't think
the
I even
album.
Managed that.
I just mean the album.
I was just like, oh, right, yeah, cool. So how are you enjoying your day, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're always tight.
Yeah.
Now, if I was to tell you what my favourite all-time festival?
Woodstock.
I was 11 years old when Woodstock was on.
Yeah, in your IRA car.
In America, we'd have been greeted as fucking heroes, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Pass the pint pot round for the donations.
And truthfully, I don't know, because there have been so many.
It's just too many.
Too many.
What was the last one you went to?
Fucking hell. Oh, the Eagles in Hyde Park.
Was that a festival, though?
Oh, no,
they
that's count
true.
That
as
was
a festival.
No,
it's just a gig,
outdoors.
Isn't it? It's just a gig.
No, it wasn't a festival.
It's just a gig. I'm trying to remember, the last one I went to was either Gilfest, which was great.
What was that? Peter Andre singing Mysterious
No, that was, without rehashing old podcasts, that was the PR for Gilfest was Roland Himes.
Ah,
so it was fantastic.
Because he was from Guildford.
Yeah, and it was great. And we saw the best band at Gilfest were the Australian Pink Floyd, who by the time they finished was like watching the real Pink Floyd.
Better.
But only in Guilford.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so that was
to
good.
To me, that's 10 times
exactly
better.
It was good. It was great. It was really good. Guildfest, or I went to, I think there was something to do with classic rock, and I went to Victoria Park in London.
Oh, yeah.
And Judas Priest did Nostradamus. That was brilliant. That was absolutely brilliant.
Well, that was possibly the last. I must have been to, I can't remember, John. I've been around.
And then they had the bloody, they had Thin Lizzy. But it was with the bloke from The Almighty.
Do you know why, though?
Because he's Lionel Irish.
Died, you see.
Yeah, that's
years
what I knew.
Because he died.
I walked up to them and I said, you won't know this, but I was in what you advertised as your last ever gig at Reading Rock in 1983. And I'm not particularly happy that I've come to this and how come you're playing?
Yeah, where's Phil?
Yeah, where's
you
Phil?
You say, where's Phil?
Yeah, for a start.
You said, you can't fool me.
It's not the same fella on the vocals as it was.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks completely different.
Completely different. He looks like this bloke I used to know in a minor band called The Almighty.
Anyway, so...
So I saw that and it was
I tell you what one of my most pleasant experiences was 2009... Download Festival, and he said Donington.
It is Donington, but they just changed the name of it.
They have, but everything changed. I mean, Donington was a one-day thing. This was like a whole weekend. And backstage, John, they had teepees.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, and you could go in and get like a cappuccino. I mean, can you have imagined
Not
that?
Really, because, I mean, the backstage area at Donington, which people used to aspire to get into, it's very much like when you see, you know, some sort of disaster area on the news and they put those tents up.
Yes.
That's what it looked like, essentially. It was very difficult to tell the difference between that and a Red Cross operation.
Well, as you were trudging through the mud.
One had a bar and one didn't, presumably.
In fact, it would be easier to tell you some of the worst festivals I've ever been to than find a good one. But the 2009 was amazing to me because I hadn't been to a Donington or a Download since the early 90s. So it was completely different.
Yeah.
But here's a little actualité that I found that I had not anticipated. I mean, I hadn't anticipated cappuccinos in a wigwam, but there were quite a lot of younger bands. What's that guy? He was in Pantera. Then he had the singer. He had his own band.
Phil Anselmo.
Yeah. What was his Down? Down,
this is
down.
This is your idea of a younger band.
Well, to me, so we're backstage, and Phil comes over to me. He's got no shirt on.
Well, why would he have? Yeah, hot day.
But don't really come and talk
he's
to me.
In
Put
down.
A fucking shirt on, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, he shook my hand and he goes, "It's an honour to meet you, sir."
Wow, who did he think you were?
I think he thought I was Mick Wall. It was an honour to meet you, sir, because I'm an old cunt who isn't around anymore.
Yeah.
What a cunt.
Yeah.
And then I met a couple of other young bands.
What he's doing there is he's disrespecting you by being nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't need that.
No.
I haven't driven all the way.
Yeah.
to listen to this. It's an honour to meet you,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah.
Like, fuck you. You know, like you would have said.
But there were
other, I can't remember what they were called, but you know, younger bands and only six albums or something. And they were going, oh, Mick, you know, if you want us to, we'll kick Axel's ass. And I'm thinking, can you all just fuck off and leave me alone? Yeah. Oh, there's Def Leppard over there. Yeah, over there.
Whoosh! Joe, remember me?
Which, of course, they do, which is good and also very old-making.
Yeah.
I remember probably one of the worst ever was when we went to see Deep Purple at Nebworth in 85. It absolutely tipped down with rain. And the backstage area was your classic mud bath.
Yeah.
But they had some tables. And I remember we didn't venture out into the crowd to watch the band. We stood on tables so we could see the stage.
Right, yeah.
Pretty good view.
Yeah.
Pouring with rain, all holding plastic beer glasses with rain going into it. And I could see pretty good. And then I'd realised, as time went on, I couldn't see quite as well. I couldn't see over the heads. And then you looked down and literally the table had sunk all the way into the ground. We were literally standing on the ground.
Yeah.
I remember when we got back to the hotel that day, I literally had mud from about my belly button to the soles of my feet. That was it. Mud.
Yeah.
And I'm in the fucking VIP
section. Yeah. Imagine what it was like out the front.
Yeah. Meatloaf was on the bill that day. He got he got absolutely bottled.
That would have been in that weird period for Meatloaf where he was just sort of,
they don't want me where I used to be, so I'll see if the heavy metal bozos will like me. And he's kind of touch and go.
Yeah.
They literally bottled him off stage.
Yeah. So it wasn't really touch and go. It was just go.
It was sort of go on that sort of fuck off level.
Yeah.
That sort of fuck off.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Well, John, anything else to add?
Well, no, just that I very much look forward to seeing a musical of Live Aid. I'm sure it'll be great.
Feed the world. Let them know it's
Christmas.
A terrible song again.
I don't know if it's true, but I've read an interview once with Justin Hawkins, where he said he wants to call The Darkness his first album Do They Know It's Christmas? And they wouldn't let him. But I thought that was very funny. Yeah.
Love The Darkness.
Yeah. Love them. Love them.
And on that bombshell.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How do I stop this, Fern?